So welcome everyone, and welcome everyone who's tuning into our live stream for the Conspicuous Podcast. I'm joined today by Stuart Walton, as usual.
Hello.
And Carl Barlow, who was our guest last week and is here again. Or if you tuned into the podcast, you'll know our secret. We record two shows back to back. So this week's episode, in fact, no, sorry, I haven't done introductions yet. Twitter handles first. So I'm Steve at Lilac Films. Please do tweet us.
Oh my goodness, I need to stand up straight. I'm looking a bit fat here.
Come on, Stuart, don't get self-conscious.
Oh, please, yes. Broadcast interrupted.
This is new technology for us, trying out the live stream on Facebook.
Oh my God.
But anyway, please do post a comment on there. We've got our other phones out and about, so we'll respond to comments and interactions. But do join us on Twitter as well for the discussion at Lilac Films. Stuart, you're at Conspicuous CBM.
I am indeed.
And Carl, you're at Digital Eyes. Eyes, E-Y-E-S underscore M. Digital Eyes underscore M. So, let's do a quick introduction of you, Carl. So, Carl, you are our guest again this week.
I am.
Tell us a bit about what Digital Eyes Media do.
So, effectively, we're a digital marketing agency. So, we help businesses make the most out of their online marketing. So, that could be their website and creating that or recreating it or refining it. And then other kinds of promotion, including social media.
Fantastic. And Stuart, tell us a bit about what you do at Conspicuous CBM.
I'm Staffordshire's leading referral marketing and business networking consultancy, helping people make the most, get the most sales, the most word of mouth leads and recommendations from the magic of referral marketing.
And you know what I've realised? I've never done an introduction for myself about what we do at Lilac Films.
What do you do, Steve?
Well, thank you for asking, Stuart. So Lilac Films, we create promotional videos for businesses. We do viral videos and we also do wedding videography. But essentially everything around video and moving media is our game. So without further ado, let's kick off this episode. So today's episode is actually about customers that won't pay us. Why won't they pay us? And we're going to have a bit of discussion around some tricks and techniques. Come on, Stuart.
I know, I'm just testing it. It works out, Steve. Don't just leave me alone, man.
So we're going to have a discussion around what tricks we can use to help get paid quicker.
Definitely.
Problems that we've had with payments in the past. But just looking at what reasons do people have not to pay? Why would you not want to pay someone on time? And have a bit of a discussion around that.
Definitely.
So, Carl, this is your one, really. So, tell us firstly, why is this something that you're passionate about? Why do you like getting paid?
I love getting paid because obviously the getting paid for the work that you do is integral to growing your business, being able to plan the things that you're doing, and being a business now that's been in operation for over 3 years. The first year, especially, we found getting paid was something that was a real struggle. And I think that some of that is through naivety, but also through lack of process. And it's so important, throughout your business to get paid so you can pay the bills.
Well, absolutely. But what things would you say in your first couple of years of starting the business? Why would you say there were delays in payments? Were the processes you hadn't put in place, or was it just a case that the types of customers you were choosing weren't good payers?
I think that there's a mixture. Definitely. I think that process is one thing. Choosing who you do business with is another one. And maybe doing a bit of research before you take them on board.
And by research, you're talking credit checking the company? Or?
Yeah, asking around, see if other people have done business with them, just to get a bit more of an overall idea of that business and those people. And it can really give you an insight into how they operate as a business so that you can put things in place to minimise your own risk at the end of the day. And not just that as well, the way that you approach that business and the quoting and the execution of the business, we reviewed all of those kind of things too. And that also made a really big difference.
Fantastic. So Stuart, what's your take on this then? So you're like us, a small business owner as well, and you've run into your fair share of issues with payments.
Yeah, I think, you know, Carl's absolutely right. You've got to choose your customer wisely. And I think you've got to get in the expectation that it's going to be hard to get money out of people. Small businesses, by definition, do not have money. Big businesses do not want to pay small businesses. So inevitably, all this is hard. So it's about choosing the right customer, having the right processes in place. And I think also, you know, I think sometimes small businesses are, they don't get paid because they've not done the work. So what I'm saying, is if you want to get paid, make sure you finish off the job that you've contracted to do. Now maybe you need to be clear with your customer, and the customer needs to be clear with you what you've agreed to do and what mutually he may have to provide to make that happen. So in the case of a website, does he have to provide copy and photos, or in the case of a video, you know, does he have to, you know, be there in front of you, you know, whilst you record and make stuff available? Whatever is required, you need some sort of contract, and maybe you need to write it down and agree, be clear about terms of payment, etc. Now clearly, if you know somebody well, your word is your bond, over a handshake you can sort things out. But a lot of people, you had to be very clear. And I think then it's about having a proper process. You need to invoice on time, and you need to have an invoice payment system. You know, we're all three of us on Xero, our favourite accounting system. It provides a lot of tools to help small businesses get paid more quickly via Xero or any of the add-ons which are available to help chase payments. It's, you know, you want to get paid, you've got to add, you've got to be professional, and you've got to systemize, you've got to have a process, and you've got to sometimes act like a big business, you know, and be tough.
So let's turn the tables around a little bit on this then. So have either of you ever not paid a supplier, and if so, why? Or not, okay, let's rephrase that. Not paid, but delayed payments, or refused to pay the invoiced amounts because of a dispute over it. Don't give me dead air here.
I think that we've had instances where a job's not being completed or not scoped correctly, so it didn't meet requirements, and that's delayed us paying something. Yeah, definitely. And as Stuart says, it's about being clear up front as to what the expectations are, what the job done looks like. And then once that's done, whether you pay in advance or you pay in arrears, it's that agreement. And as Stuart was saying, as long as you have that documented up front, then there can be no ambiguity. From what we've found, the difficulty in getting paid is when there's ambiguity, whether it's you getting paid in advance, getting paid in arrears, or on job completion, or whatever that is. If you've not set that up at the beginning, then that's if there's any time that there could be an excuse, there will be an excuse.
Oh, yeah.
And you need to minimise the amount of wiggle room that maybe somebody's got to not pay. And there's, as we were saying, there's lots of different things that you could do, and the things that we've tried, some things have worked, some things haven't, to minimise the risk, essentially.
Now, I'll say there's one thing I think, actually, to be fair to businesses that have had a dispute and not paid, there are often, actually, reasons where things have come up. I mean, it's not just around terms and conditions disputes, but it's often something. Okay, let's talk creatives. I am a creative, but I think they're a fair group to have a dig at, because they're often the worst, where they will do a project, they will agree a brief to it, agree a quoted budget, provide a sort of like very detailed quote to it. The client will change something, but they won't tell the client then that has changed the amount of time that it's going to take them to do it, by possibly in some cases a significant amount. Mm-hmm. They'll assume that the client will then just accept whatever they invoice them after it, and not think that the client is expected to pay what was quoted. And I think a lot of the issues that come up are around poor communication. That communication Definitely. Is king with getting paid. Because if you told someone outright, yes, I'll make those changes for you, yes, I'll put that happy smiley face on the top of your business card, but it's going to cost you X, Y, or Z. And they've said, and you've got something in confirmation, be it email or some form of writing, but there's been a discussion outside of a phone call or a mate's handshake that says, I'm going to pay you for this, I accept that, go on and proceed with the work. I mean, there's a reason that purchase order systems work so well, because it removes ambiguity. It states quite clearly that while we accept your terms and conditions, you also have to accept ours. Mm-hmm. And that means you coming back to us and telling us if it goes past that. And most companies are very fair about it. Most companies will say, we'll give you 10% leeway in that. But I'll give you an example of when we didn't pay the full amount for something. This is in my personal life, not in my business life. But we hired some bathroom contractors, and they gave us a quote. The quote was for £2,500. And in their own terms and conditions, they detailed that they'd tell us if they went over that quote, which which they didn't.
They
delayed the job by 6 months. Their quote didn't have any time delays on it, so it wasn't a sort of like the 3 months this quote is redundant or anything like that. And they then came back and the quote, the finished invoice for the work completed wasn't £2,500, it was £4,500 that they wanted for the job for it. So as you do, you ask where this discrepancy had come from, and the builders gave a whole long list of all these things for it. And I looked at it, and you may say I was soft here, but we paid them the £2,500 without any sort of like discussions. They did a good job of it. But we contested the remaining £2,000 for that, and that kind of went back and forth for a while, until we eventually sort of like we agreed that we'd pay an amount for that, which was something like £700. So we paid just under 40% of what they wanted, because we felt they'd done a good job, but we wouldn't have accepted the job had they quoted £4,500 for what we deemed to be £3,500 job for that.
Yeah.
But it's also fair to come back and sort of say, well, actually, did we choose our suppliers wisely? Did we choose them because they were cheap and possibly not the most professional business? And coming back to what you said on there as well. So I think it's also important to self-reflect when you find yourself in that issue of why you find yourself in this issue of not being...
And I think sometimes, you know, Steve, sorry to interrupt you there, but if you don't want to spend, you know, if you don't want to pay somebody, don't spend the money in the first place. Sometimes people get themselves in situations, they buy stuff, you know, they get a bit excited about, you know, maybe it's a, you know, something to do with the vanity in cars, and you know, do you really need to spend the money? You know, if you don't want to pay somebody, don't spend the money in the first place, because that's often the best way of self censoring yourself, is actually having a bit of self control about the way you do business and stuff like that. And you know, there may be this sort of the parsimonious nature of my accounting background, but you know, if you don't need to spend it, don't spend it. Then you avoid all the problems in the first place.
And one of your pills of wisdom is always, don't get excited about the job until you get paid.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. That's the thing. Don't count the money being there until it's in your bank account.
Yeah.
Often it comes back to expectations as well. That this is where another issue comes up as well. That your client's expectations are here, and the reality of what you deliver is over here, mm-hmm. and they're never going to meet.
And as small businesses, you know, the sums of money involved. And when I had a proper job, and we were dealing with contracts, you know, and projects worth, you know, millions, tens of millions of pounds, there was a whole structure involved around contract management, project management, you know, terms and conditions, the whole contract, you know, the contracts would be ex-fixed, the sort of terms, the sort of understanding how things were done, engineering support, you name it, the whole thing was well laid out. And there would be regular review meetings, etc. So in a sense, there should be no surprises. People got paid, you did a job. If there was, you know, in a day, complex projects always have issues, and you sort of try to sort them out as best you can. The idea, you know, at the end of the day, you've quoted properly in the first place, and that was, you know, I guess risk and taking everything. You know, trying to make it up in variations afterwards is always probably a highly risky activity, in my view, and try to avoid it in the first place. The whole thing, small companies, we're talking small amounts of money, so people don't have the infrastructure. You know, the typical self-employed business owner is doing it all himself. He's both tendering, doing the work, trying to collect the money. You know, things become more lax, more things, you know, but it doesn't take much to have a certain level of discipline to avoid some of the major own goals. And you know, sometimes it's about choosing your customers. Your first few customers, you know, when you first start in business, are going to be the nightmare ones. You know, you're going to have to learn from this lesson. You know, it's a philosophical one. And afterwards, you have to move on and find better customers, as Carl says, once you pay.
I can't agree more with that. I think in your first year of business, there's a reason that so many businesses fail. And it's because you just get some awful, awful customers. You get some great ones as well.
Yeah.
But you're at that stage where you're glad to have the work. You'll pretty much take any work that's there. You'll happily negotiate for the work, but you won't think at what costs are you negotiating. And then you find yourself 2-3 years down the line for that, and those customers are still trying to negotiate in the same way. And you're thinking, how viable is this job really? How viable is this customer? How good are these customers?
And you've probably not priced it right in the first place, you know, the real value, because you wanted to get going. Now, sometimes it's important. You've got to get your foot in the door. You've got to practice the whole world of business. You've got to build up your confidence. And sometimes those first customers, you've got to give them they're taking a risk on you, because they know nothing about you. So that's a bit, sometimes you can't, you know, get too greedy. But the first few customers are going to be tough, and you're going to have to expect it. And but afterwards, if you're continuously not getting paid, you know, then you've got to think hard about your process.
But also, I think early on, you don't really have any concept of the value of lost opportunity as well.
Yeah.
Because work is work, and being busy is great.
Yeah.
And early on, you don't have that that thought process to say, well, if I'm spending X amount of time on that project, what am I not doing? What am I not doing in my business?
You don't value your time. Is essentially the crux of it.
You know, even in big companies, you know, not finishing off a project, you know, is a criminal, because that's a complete bleed of money. And you know, one of the jobs I had, you know, the first thing we did was try to finish off all the jobs that we got and going, which weren't finishing off properly, in order to so we can concentrate on the new ones. Yeah. Because you just end up with, you just can't cope. And, you know, that's a problem that afflicts small, medium and big businesses.
So let's move on from this and look at, actually, what are the things we can do to help ourselves get paid more effectively? I'm going to kick this off with a story, actually, that I was told by a local staffer business. I'm not going to name them just in case I embarrass them, but I know they do listen to this show. As we've got a small amount of listeners, I'm sure it's going to be difficult to work out who it is that I'm going to talk about. So the story goes like this. They were supplying some equipment to this company, and on 30-day terms, the month goes by, no payment. So they get the phone call and sort of like just checking for your invoice, no communication back. Okay, so another month goes by, and they chase them, and still they're getting fobbed off now as well. They're talking to them, but they're fobbing them off about something that hasn't happened as well. Another month goes by. And this company has given stock away, basically. I mean, if you're in the stock business, clearly.
And that's real margin out the door.
That's your margin gone by that delay for it. So the chap that had told me the story, so I said, how did you resolve it? And he said, I got in my car, and it was a golf course. I should add this in, this is part of the story. I got in my car, I drive down, and I parked on the 18th hole. And I left my car there until I saw them do a bank transfer for that. And you know what? And I sort of said, so they never did business with you again. He said, no, they always pay me on time after that.
Yeah.
There's something about, I think, a show of strength. When a business knows when they're messing about, when they receive the goods and they're just not paying, and you actually stand up for yourself, everyone thinks, you know what, we're going to lose a customer for that. But actually, I think when something is unfair and you call someone out on that, you say, look, this isn't on. I'm not going to say go into the extreme, park your car on the 18th hole, but the verbal equivalent of that will make a big difference to how that relationship proceeds forward. You may lose a customer on that, but do you really want a customer that doesn't respect you enough to actually realise that 90 days they've kept you waiting is essentially
a loss
to your bottom line, and it's
back to what Carl says, it's an opportunity cost that you are, you know, that is costing you real money by having these people taking up your time, you know, your valuable time as a small business owner, you know, having them chase the money. Now, you know, nobody's perfect, and there's always somebody who's going to take, you know, slightly longer than they should, but you know, if you're having to park your car, that's not a good sign. And if you lose them, well, tough. You know, and you've got to be man enough to do it. You know, park your car in front of their lawn.
Yeah, but as we were saying before, it's the communication. And yes, people have problems. They may have their own cash flow where people aren't paying them, and all those kind of things. If you've got that dialogue, then you've got more chance to be more sympathetic to whatever their circumstances. Yeah. Obviously, they still may push that to the limit. But at least you've got that dialogue to say, I will pay you, and I'll pay you here, or whatever, if it is a genuine issue. And again, it's the communication side. That if it's a genuine problem, then tell them. You know what I mean? We're doing business together, and if you want to continue it, you've got to be open about some of these kind of things.
Yeah.
And it can really help.
Now my technique is slightly softer, that when a company or business goes over the 30 days, the first thing I'll try and do is make sure I'll have a phone call rather than email, and I'll ask the person, whether it's an account manager or whether it's the actual business owner, just the question, are there any problems with it? And 9 times out of 10, that friendly but slightly, I guess you could say, passive aggressive communication, we all know what we're saying in that as well. We're not saying, are there any problems? We're saying, pay me now. Yeah. But that sort of that passive aggressive communication actually can just motivate people. And often, I think it's not a bad thing to see the best in people and to let them prove you wrong and then to take more serious measures rather than start thinking, right, we've got to go to court for this, we'll go small claims and chase this money down for it. I think there's often a reason why, and it's fair to give someone a chance to explain.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, it depends on the value of the business and the terms that were agreed early on. But if there was a little bit of ambiguity in your terms, that it was very much a sort of like, well, okay, we're going to deliver to this point and we'll have the payment upon completion, there can be ambiguity about when completion actually is from the two sides. And maybe when a customer, in my case, puts a film live and I may be thinking, well, it's actually when I've delivered the film to you and it's in your hands. I don't care when you put it live on your website. That's down to you. But for them, they may be in the mindset of that's the point when the 30-day term starts.
And that's where it's all, you know, you've got a bit of time, lessons learned, you know, and put it in your, not, I wouldn't say terms and conditions, but just, you know, the way, you know, in the sense of, you know, when you certainly when you get, if you have given them an offer, and it goes back to process. You know, if somebody says they want something done, let's say in your case they either want to film, you know, you've got to write back to them saying, this is what I'm going to do for, you know, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to get paid, this is what I expect you to do. And if you, you know, even if it's a standard boilerplate type document, the value of doing that is, A, it's clear, you can put down anything special, it's part of the process, they've got a thing, you make sure you look professional, you can unload that up into Xero or some other system, and it's the whole thing just works from there. And then there shouldn't be any surprises for them or for you, because it's all clearly done. And that's, I mean, I suppose lots more businesses, you know, you see, is they rush into doing work before actually just, you know, whoa, 2 seconds, let's just sort out what we're actually agreed here, and not, and as I say, not getting too excited, you know.
Yeah,
getting
excited about the project, because
being
a creative as well, you do get embroiled in the project, and the motivation isn't necessarily the money, it's about that project.
And that's the same problem, you know, we see that in engineering, see that in manufacturing, see that all, a lot of things, you know, they get excited in, you know, doing whatever, you know, showing their skills, and, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't always get the bills paid.
Nope. But also, I think what I was thinking as you were talking, Steve, is that some businesses genuinely are disorganised and they have genuinely forgotten to pay you. And it does happen, and that sort of soft first touch definitely sort of helps to sort of remind them.
Yeah, it comes back to seeing the best in them as well. Why taint their relationship when it probably is an honest human error? Yep. Until you know that there's something else going on there, I always say, don't jump to conclusions. Now, okay, it's tough if they're not talking to you, and I'd sort of say, well, okay, I'd say you've got a 3-point communication rule if you tried phoning, emailing and then visiting the premises and still not got anywhere, then fair enough, take whatever means you need to for that. But if you've tried all those three and you've actually got someone with it, then make your own mind on what you feel about what they've come back and said about it. Now, the one that I always wonder about then, with bills not being paid, what about the issues where something has gone wrong with the project and no one is agreeing whose fault it is, but clearly money's not going to be exchanged here, or nothing further than what's already been paid is going to be exchanged here for that. Is there any other alternative than going down the small claims route and losing the client over that? Or is there a resolution that can be had?
I would say small claims, last option, really. You know, if there's a problem in a project and you've got to be honest enough to say, you know, have I got a part in this problem? You've got to fix the problem. If you fix the problem, you deliver the project, and if it's cost you an arm or a leg, and you know that's unfortunately you've got to man up to the issue, you know, come with me, you've got to finish off the work, you know, and they still don't pay after that, and then you think. But the problem is, if you go to any legal aspect, it's you know what you think is your, you know, is you know your reality is not necessarily, you know, you're going to be confronted with the opposite point of view from somebody else. And in court, you know, you might be surprised as to what people think is right or wrong. So, you know, avoid that like the plague is probably a thing, and do what you can, because, you know, because none of you guys that are probably listening to the podcast will have enough systems in place to be able to prove one way or another, with the right sort of thick levels of documentation which a big companies can employ in order to trap you in a project. I'd say finish off the work. Well, let's be clear. Sort out what you're doing in the first place. You know, do it with a customer that, you know, you feel you can work with and get it done. And it goes back to a thing. Choose your customers wisely. Choose your projects wisely. Don't get in over your head. Don't quote for something or agree that you're going to do something that you just can't deliver. Assume it's going to be tough. You know, if you went on a massive film project and across five continents, Steve, you know, that you know they may not be dangling a big sum of money, but if it kills you in the process and you can't deliver the film, you know, it's not worth taking the work. And the same with you, Carl. Taking on a website which is too big, it's just not worth doing, you know, and it's...
And let's go back to that point as well, that if you're going to take on a job, any job whatsoever, and you're going to incur costs for that, you've got to be so confident in that client if you're not going to make sure all those costs are covered at the very least up front. Mm. The bare minimum for any starting any job should mean that if everything goes wrong with it, you're thinking worst case scenarios, that you're not going to lose money at the end of it. That at the very least, your costs are covered and you're on an even ground there for that. So if you travel five continents for that, you've got the plane fare to cover that, you've got the hotel fares to cover that. That's been paid for by the client and that's your bank account. None of this will pay you upon your return.
Yeah, we'll sort you out.
Just put it on your invoice and things like that. You've got to be absolutely rock solid certain of your clients to be able to take that risk.
I mean, I met a chap who's starting a business involved in providing a service, and he's it's clear service that can appeal to small businesses as well, large ones. And he was talking about in a sense continuing what he'd done in employment, and his major customer. I said, you know, would you be able to cope with a customer like that? He says, clearly not, because you know there was a massive amount of people involved in servicing that customer when he was in his own employment. So that's clearly, he can't take the financial risk. So don't, it's no point going for that sort of customer. You've got to go for, be sensible as to what you can take on. And he had a good understanding of the risks, he could take and the risks he clearly can't.
But it's also not just always linked to the project. It could be that anything could happen. Big businesses can grow out of business as well as small ones. So if that company went completely under, then
I remember my father telling me, that... one of his clients, this is way back in the early 70s, one of his customers on his ledger was Rolls-Royce PLC, they couldn't pay the bills, and he thought, well, this is too much of a risk. Oh no, it's Rolls-Royce, blah blah blah, this thing, a few months later they were in administration, and a great name of British engineering was split asunder, I think, so don't just assume a big company with a fancy name is gonna, is gonna be there tomorrow. If stuff happens,
it can happen to anyone. And if you're, and that's the whole point of chasing it down and not letting it go past those 30-60 days, that it causes one, a massive accounting issue, but the longer you leave it, you don't know what the state of the business is.
And we're all too soft, and let's be honest, we're all too soft. We're all too nice. We're all too kind. Been there myself. Bob, he'll be all right. Don't trust him. Take the money and think. But then on reverse, if you don't want to be the guy that's being chased, don't spend the money, Keep your hands in the pocket, don't get excited, don't spend the money on this, that and the other.
Now, I think one of the most important places where often having a good agreement in place is often forgotten is in networking. That all three of us network. We talked about this in the past. We're all part of a networking group called Business for Breakfast. And it's a referral marketing organisation where we share contacts and introductions to one another within the group. But essentially, the members will quite often do business with one another. And because they're good friends, because they meet regularly, there will be often very, very limited, and I'm guilty of this as well, but limited terms, conditions, limited agreements. And I think a lot of people don't realise how vulnerable they are in that, that if there's a dispute, it's not like a dispute between yourself and a customer where you're going to lose one customer. Having a dispute with someone that is essentially a referral partner or within a network, a close network that you're part of, what's the first thing they're going to do when you complain about them?
They're going to complain about you and moan about you.
And where does your reputation go and where does their reputation go? Your reputations go down
again,
the pan.
And if I can really say, keep your hands in pockets, don't do business. The people you meet networking, you got to test out and, not assume that, you really got to go for the maximum character equals competence to the nth degree. Do not do business with people, because, unless it's something very quick and easy, somebody says, here's a pen, here's my pound, we're all done and dusted, a pound, if the pen is not brilliant, well, I've just lost a pound, not a big deal. But people are involved with websites, they get involved in IT projects, they get involved with all sorts. And then it ends up in tears. And they start moaning at us, Steve. Do you want to hear other people's moan stories because they've not sorted them out themselves? No. Please, be very careful about doing business with people you meet at networking. Yes, you meet some fantastic people, some great success people, but not everybody is a good person. Sometimes you have to be just a bit careful about them.
Definitely.
Why would you treat anyone any differently just because you
know? I look out for the signals, you know, if they don't turn up for stuff or they look unreliable, they look slovenly, you know, I can carry on.
Look, you know. Slovenly.
Sorry, Steve, you know. But Steve got his hair cut when I first met him, so now he's looking very, presentable. But, you know, my point is that, you know, they all exhibit, people who are bad pairs often exhibit the behaviours which you wouldn't tolerate elsewhere. So please, please, please be very careful and look out for the signals.
So, Carl, any tips on things that you used to actually chase down debts, accounting systems or anything like that that you've put in place just really help sort of like stop yourself getting into that situation where you find the debts have racked up and then before you know it, sort of like you're spending all your time just chasing money?
Yeah, so being in control as much as you can. So we use direct debits as opposed to standing orders for people that have got any kind of recurring payments.
So with a direct debit, you can change the payment amounts.
Yeah, if you need to, yeah, it depends on how you set it up. But we use a system called Go Cardless, which is amazing. It's really low cost, but it puts you in control. So essentially, the person setting up the direct debit is the ignition almost of the project. So nothing happens until that's in place, because again, it puts us in control of that agreement. And you are notified as soon as a payment doesn't successfully go through, and it's automatic, so you don't need to worry about it every month and chase it every month. You are in a position where it's going to get taken on the same day every month or however you set that up, so it really helps with your accounting. The other thing that we do as well is we use Xero, as Stuart's already mentioned.
So Xero is the popular accounting software, exactly, cloud-based accounting, very clever, functional, and...
Yeah, exactly. And in Xero, you can automatically remind people through email when a bill is due or overdue, so that, again, that prompts that forgetfulness, which definitely helps. So that's also a good thing. As a business that buys stuff in as well, one of the things that I've noticed is that some businesses don't half make it difficult for you to pay them. They don't give you their bank details. They don't give you any kind of terms. They just give you an invoice.
I think that's what it is.
So frustrating.
The businesses that send off invoices without bank details on there. I mean, there's two types. There's one where they're just the disorganized, and there's the ones where they just haven't quite kept up with modern technology, that they sort of they're like cash-based businesses or ones where they still want to check in the post. Who wants checks nowadays? Why haven't checks gone the way of the dodo?
Yeah, and you know, in things like Xero, you can incorporate, you know, payments for PayPal, credit cards. You know, it's you know, you go cardless is again integrates. There's lots of different ways of doing it, and you know, got to keep on top of it. You know, a good accounting system, to my mind, is you know, keep on top. Because, you know, even if you don't have 101 customers, you've just got a few, you know, keeping all that in your head, you know, you've got to be a, you know, qualified accountant to know, you know, who owes you money and who doesn't. You know, most ordinary businesses are just too busy. So have an accounting system, review your numbers on a regular basis. Keep up to date your invoicing both ways.
But for the cost of it, it's just not worth the hassle using something like Xero. I mean, our invoices have got card payment on there, bank details on there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy to make a payment. You can't use that as something that...
And I think if people don't pay after a while, you just give up, you know, and you don't stop surprising the service. You know, you've got to be hard, and, you know, you can either park your car in front on the 18th green, or...
you take something away from them.
Or, you don't provide any more help or support. It's, at the end of the day, the situation is with you, you know, so you've just got to be, we're not here to be charities.
Definitely. I think there's, as we were saying with the communication at the beginning... that the quoting process can be a really good starting point to state your intentions and how you do business.
Without being, without appearing, to be difficult. You're just trying to appear organised, just giving people clear and precise information. You know, Xero can assist you with all that, if you want to be super organised and often it's just a question of cut and paste. You know, who can't do that on a computer?
Definitely. I mean, we've recently, in the last 6 months probably, changed our quoting system so that when a quote gets issued for a project, like a website or whatever, that the payments are quite clearly noted in the quote. And what we've changed recently is that they're no longer checkpoint based, so it's not based on the project hitting a certain period of time. It's actually date range now, so that we schedule it over 3 payments, for example. The initial payment is on instruction, the second payment is on either the milestone of that project or X amount of weeks from the start. So again, that takes away that issue of the communication of not getting stuff to complete the project, and then you get into that whole blame game. It's quite clearly stated that you will be billed at this point in time, again, so that there is no ambiguity about what that checkpoint in the project is, because that was something that we found in the past caused an issue. So we fixed it, and actually that now works really, really well, because there is a minimum term. So once the project starts, all the invoices are raised and future dated, so they go out regardless. So that really helps to make sure that projects don't stall, and it also gives the customer the incentive to meet their part of that agreement as well.
So clever systems clearly just make things a lot easier. Anything that can take it out of being in your mind. Mm. Your mind's a place where things will just get lost. We're humans, we'll forget, and the more you try and put it and rely on that.
And if you think you are a disorganised, you know, a person that administration is what you think, you know, find a friend that can help you. You know, there's plenty of assistants out there that can help you from the simplest tasks, from organizing your day to doing your invoicing to chasing your payments to the use of technology. Help is out there. You know, just spend a bit of time investigating this. Don't let it fester and not be done.
So yeah, we're going to draw this episode to an end. Sorry, Carl, before I draw to an end, let's hear your finished line on this.
Yeah, so just to add on to what Stuart was just saying, one of the probably single most important things that we've done differently is by being a small business, what you'll find is that a lot of people will be at that quote stage. They'll be doing the whole sales process with the client. They'll then be delivering the project, and then they'll be the person that's chasing it. And when you're the sort of the person that's involved at every stage in that project, it's very easy to get put off by not paying or being afraid of chasing. Whereas we've had somebody that now does chasing for us, and also invoices don't go out with my name on it, for example. They go out from an accounts department, and it's all chased very separate from the project, and it's seen as a different department. And I think that really makes a massive, massive difference.
So that's to trick the client, to make them sort of think like you can still be the good guy, yeah, there, and you can make up this fictional bad guy that does the chasing. And
yeah, it's not to be deceptive in that way. It's more to be seen as a business that takes accounting seriously.
Yeah.
And it's much easier that if we've got a friendly relationship because we meet regularly at a B4B or wherever, it's easier for you to say, oh, I'll sort that out. And then you've got that ambiguity again. Whereas when it's somebody that you don't know and you've not had that level of interaction with, you don't feel like you can push that boundary as much, which then makes it infinitely more effective.
Stuart, anything to wrap up with?
Don't do business with countries with green in their flag.
Yes, we forgot to get that one in there.
Yes, indeed.
If you're not sure what that means,
yes, be very careful with exporting to countries with green in their flag. You're unlikely to be paid.
And with our token racism in there as well. Let's wrap that episode up as well. So please do share your horror stories as well. What tricks have you used to get yourselves paid quicker? Have you ever had to park your car on the 18th green? Or what strange things have you seen done to get a bill paid? But tweet us. Tweet myself at Lilac Films. Tweet Carl at Digital Eyes, EYES-M.
Underscore M.
Let me get that one right. Digital Eyes underscore M. And Stuart at Conspicuous CBM.
Well done there, Steve. Yeah.
We got there.
Indeed.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And we'll look forward to seeing you on another episode next Monday. Take care now.
Bye-bye.